Welcome to episode 194 of the GTO on 5G. It's the latest inside scoop on everything 5G. We cover six topics in about 20 minutes, and it's brought to you by More Insights and Strategy. I'm Will Townsend, and joining me again this week is fellow analyst Anshul Sag. But before we get started, Anshul and I were hanging out together at Dell Tech World, and then, buddy, you did double duty. You were at Build earlier in the week, right?
Yep, Build, and then overnighted myself to Dell Tech in Vegas. Thankfully, it's all in the same times.
Yeah, for sure. And I know one of your topics is going to center on some of the stuff that you learned with Microsoft as well, and some of the new Copilot and AI PCs and with 5G integration. But let me get started with my first topic, and I want to talk about Ericsson. And they're investing another $50 million in an Open RAN ready 5G factory. So this is in Dallas. It's in a suburb called Louisville. It's the Louisville Fighting Farmers. That's the high school mascot there. And I know it well because I lived in Dallas for several years. But Ericsson opened this facility just right before the pandemic at a cost of over $100 million. It covers over 300,000 square feet. And they recently invited analysts and media to tour the facility. Unfortunately, I could not make that. I was included on that invite list, but the Fierce team, the light reading team, I think Mike Dammit was there as well. They had a cadre of journalists and media folks and the analysts that toured it. And what, from my perspective, is interesting about this is that the company is manufacturing its products there, and it's doing a lot around MIMO antenna infrastructure construction. And I didn't know this, as I read this Fierce article, the ASIC designs are actually down in Austin, my hometown. And then in Louisville, they're putting this all together. And what I really like about what Ericsson's doing is that they're eating their own dog food, they're sipping their own champagne, whatever analogy you want to use, but they're using private cellular networking to facilitate all of this. And there's some pretty amazing statistics that they were able to speak about. And from an efficiency standpoint, the company points to reducing energy consumption by 25% and water usage by 75%. So it's pretty compelling. There's a lot of sustainability advantages in deploying cellular. Obviously, cellular is much more deterministic than Wi-Fi, given Wi-Fi handoffs and that sort of thing. And it's clearly a great demonstration of using private cellular networking within a manufacturing environment. And what they're also saying from an Open RAN ready perspective is that the majority of the products that they're building are Open RAN capable. And so this really benefits Ericsson in a number of different ways. Number one, it's domestic production. And I'm going to also talk about Nokia later in the podcast and what they're doing around federal. But it domesticates the supply chain. There's certainly advantages with continuity of supply since the antennas that they're building there are actually produced in the U.S. And I don't know, I'm envious now of Mike and the Fierce team and others that got the tour. I'm hoping to get a tour scheduled here in the not too distant future. But don't know if you caught the news, but this is a pretty significant increase in its investment. Certainly, it's tied to its $14 billion collaboration with AT&T. And my buddy, Igal Ibez, was actually there for the tour and spoke to how the companies are working together and the advantages of basically delivering an open network to facilitate programmability and agility and that sort of thing. So I'm sure you caught the names. Any further comments or insights?
Yeah, I was also invited to this, but I also couldn't attend. I didn't know the dollar value, but it definitely would have been cool to attend just because of Ericsson's role in the U.S. market and helping to bring Open RAN to a more prominent position in the U.S. market. But other than that, it's obvious to see AT&T involved makes sense. And yeah, it seems like Texas continues to be the center of a lot of America's 5G domestic production capabilities.
Yeah, for sure. And let's not forget about AST Space Mall. They're based in Midland. And I'll have some news to share in the coming weeks as I continue to have conversations with Abel and his team there. But let's jump into your first topic. And you want to talk about T-Mobile, and there was a price increase, but there's a bit of context that you want to add to that.
Yes. So some customers with older plan are getting price increases. I'm apparently getting a price increase, and I don't even know how because I'm on a Magenta plan, but I guess it's too old. And there are newer plans now, but I think I got a notification I'm getting $4 per line or something. It's pretty significant. But the one thing that's interesting is, one, this is something that like a lot of customers are upset about because a lot of them were told that their prices weren't going to increase, but it seems like they are now. And then on top of that, T-Mobile, I feel, is following the lead of AT&T and Verizon, who both raised their prices this year. So I think that T-Mobile is under pressure potentially from its own investors to raise prices, because if you look at T-Mobile stock, it's been pretty steadily growing. And I have a feeling that if they're raising prices, it's because they believe that they are most likely the best carrier, and they want to be able to pay for the upgrades and also charge for being the best 5G carrier. I will say that most people are not thrilled about this. I really can't imagine anyone's really thrilled about this. But it is a reality, and I feel a lot of people are upset because they thought their T-Mobile wasn't going to raise prices on them. I didn't really have any good explanations or hear any good explanation, but price increases generally suck for everyone. This probably sounds like it might be a necessity for all of the investments that T-Mobile has made in the last few years, and I think this is their first price increase in 10 years. I think this is also how they're justifying the fact that it's happening now. But yeah, it's a reality, and I think it will be interesting to see how that shakes out over time.
I'm not surprised to see this because they're following their competitors, and there's no need to leave ARPU on the table from my perspective. And also, T-Mobile is an entirely different position now than it was before its 5G journey. They're offering one of the most robust 5G networks. They've been the fastest to deploy, and we've talked about that on numerous podcasts. So there's no longer a need for them to be the value player. And I think you can define value in a lot of different ways. They do a lot with what I call entitlements with the Magenta plan that you're on, where you get things like streaming services included and that sort of thing. And they've been a leader as far as offering higher throttle caps and that sort of thing. So I'm not surprised to see that happen. No one likes price increases, right? But the fact that this is the first major increase in a decade speaks volumes to what they're delivering subscribers from a balanced value perspective, when because it's just not all about price. It's about network reliability, it's about dependability, it's about resilience, and so all the other kind of intrinsic softer things that T-Mobile has continued to do in the consumer space to be very disruptive there. I'm not surprised to see it, but I think if people look at the holistic value that T-Mobile delivers and also Verizon and AT&T, I think it is what it is, and I still think there's value there, but that's just my take on it. But hey, let me talk about my second topic, and it's Deutsche Telekom. And they continue to focus on private networking solutions. And I caught the news on RCR Wireless that they have deployed a massive private 5G campus network for a very large paper mill in Germany. And it's large from the standpoint that it's the equivalent to 50 football fields. Now, in Europe, football is soccer, but it's not US for ball, so it's soccer field, but still, it's quite massive. It covers 350,000 square meters. And the company is Hamburger Containerboard. And what I found really interesting about what the company has to say about its 5G network is that they believe that it's going to help optimize information for our logistics and production processes at the site. And they produce an incredible amount of paper product, nearly 1 million tons annually. Much of some of the things that I was talking about with Ericsson's 5G factory and what they're seeing from a power efficiency and water efficiency with paper mills. And I know this because in college, I had a college roommate who in the summers, he lived in Wisconsin. He'd work at a paper mill. And talk about use of water in paper mills. It's huge because they have to basically produce the pulp that get basically transformed into paper. And I would assume that in employing a cellular network, they're going to see some of the same efficiency that I was just talking about with Ericsson. But I don't know if you caught this. There was a lot of news this week, but I think it's pretty compelling. What do you think?
Yeah, I did not see this news. I did look into it afterward. I do think it's interesting, but I also think it continues to prove that like private 5G application are relevant for manufacturing, especially. Yeah. And at Dell Tech, I actually did check out the 5G AI demo area, and they had some demos for basically 5G private networks in a box, which it was part of Dell's partnership with Nokia, and showing how they could deploy this in a brewery to monitor bottling, things like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it makes sense. Private 5G is going to be a lot of manufacturing facilities transition to a more modern manufacturing industry 4.0.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I've often, when I'm asked, you know, by journalists, what I think one of the biggest sort of applications for private cellular, my answer is manufacturing automation. And by my estimate, it could be upwards of 50% of the total addressable market for that application. And we continue to see examples of that with Deutsche Telekom or with Ericsson. But hey, let's move to your second topic. And you want to talk about a 5G use case. And this has to do with drone deployment in Scotland.
Yeah, so this story, I originally found it on the BBC. But if you go and look far back enough, Light Reading also posted about it. And basically what it is, they are already using drones for search and recovery
of thermal.
With thermal devices, things like that. But now they want to use drones for 5G as 5G base stations to transmit video footage during search and rescue operation. So they're also using drones as infrastructure. And this is, the company's called Jet Connectivity. They have pop-up 5G base stations that can be put on a drone to create a self-deploying 5G network. So that way, search and rescue people can actually communicate back and forth when they're looking for someone. And yeah, this is happening up in Scotland. I think they're basically trying to find ways to improve connectivity. And this is more of a trial. This isn't like something they're deploying now. But it's cool to see that there are more places they're starting to use drones for networking. Obviously, we've had them in the US for some time, but those were primarily 4G application. And a lot of them are still, they never really made it to 5G. But we do have some drones for surveillance purposes. It's great to hear that this is something that can improve how search and rescue teams operate and improve time to finding them and then time to recovering them. So I think this is a net positive for a lot of people. And other companies like Telenor are also testing these kinds of things out, which Light Reading referred to. But the BBC was originally what actually caught my eye on this story. Looked into it a little more, and yeah, it's really cool because Jet Connectivity was really the company who created this 5G base station that's light enough and low power enough to be carried by a drone, and that's real. Yep. The real innovation here. And yeah, this was partially funded by the Scottish government, and there's a lot of companies involved, including Abertay University and Scotland's 5G Center. It's a lot of collaborative public-private partnerships.
I think it's a killer use case. I saw this for the first time a couple of years ago when I was in Riga. And I spend every year in October, typically October, November, in Riga at an event called 5G Territory. And LMT, Latvia Mobile Telephone, demonstrated this capability, basically. And it's not what, from a pop-up perspective at venues and that sort of thing, to bring additional connectivity, like a cold or a cow or that sort of thing. And I've actually seen this sort of scenario deployed with balloons as well, but using a drone is super, super innovative from my perspective. And for search and rescue, it could be huge. Natural disasters, when you think about hurricanes that might hit my home in the Florida Keys or even on the Texas coast, it could play a real role in to your point, in improving the outcome of finding people that are in distress. And certainly we've seen a lot of drone applications for 5G used for power line inspection and within ports and that sort of thing. And so I really love this use case. And there are companies like EdgeQ that are trying to shrink the base station down to silicon And there are advantages there from a power and operational perspective that could even enhance this business case and outcome even further. So I love it. I think it's a great showcase for what, you know, can be done with drone technology. But hey, let's go ahead. My third and final topic. We're being really efficient today because you and I are way behind based on all of our worldly travels. But I want to talk about Nokia. And they've acquired a company called Phoenix Group to strengthen its federal solutions business unit. And we've talked about this on a prior podcast, how both Ericsson and Nokia are very smartly pivoting into defense and federal government type solutions so that they can expand their footprint in their sales. And what's really interesting about Phoenix is that they're already a well-established DoD supplier, and they've been providing very portable solutions that can be taken into war theater, like a backpack type size, all-in-one solution so that you can set up critical communication. Mm-hmm. And so I really think this is a smart acquisition on Nokia's part. Nokia had a prior solution, an LTE solution, but I think this does two things for Nokia. Number one, it probably brings them some differentiated technology into play. Yeah. And it strengthens their position because dealing or selling to the federal government is not a trivial undertaking. And you have to be on things like the GSA schedule and that sort of thing. And so this, just from my perspective, strengthens Nokia's capability to focus on LTE and 5G connectivity solutions that are targeted towards battlefield type applications. So I don't know if you caught this news, but any thoughts before we hit your third topic?
Yeah, I don't really have any thoughts, but I do agree with you that it's easier to acquire your way into the federal government than it is to slowly, gradually, way through all the red tape.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Hey, last but not least, you're our device guru expert in the firm. And so you spent some time, like we were saying earlier, at Microsoft Build. And it's pretty exciting this week. These new Copilot Plus AI PCs have been unveiled. We did see some at Dell Tech World. What's amazing about Dell, Dell's a former employer, and so I'm not going to hurt on Dell in the least, but typically Dell's been a sort of a fastest follower, if you want to call it that. And typically with a new platform, Dell usually dips its toe and might have one or two offerings, but I think Dell had five or six different versions in its Inspiron and its XPS line. But I don't want to steal any more thunder from you, but what did you learn at Build?
Yeah, so Build was Microsoft's opportunity to unleash the Copilot Plus PC on the world, which means that completely re-architected operating system for Windows 11 with AI in mind. And one of the things that came out from that were two new Surface laptops, the Surface Laptop and the Surface Pro. And one of the Surface Pros will come with 5G later in the year. So launch it will be Wi-Fi, but down the road, there will be a 5G variant, which I'm very excited about. My understanding is it will be sometime in the fall. But nevertheless, they had the entire ecosystem behind them. It was all, these are all Snapdragon X Elite based PCs. So this is ARM really coming forward. So it's like a mobile story, but it's also a PC story, which is something we haven't really been able to talk about in the past. So wow. ARM is really taking over Windows now. And I believe that this will eventually transition to more 5G connected PCs, especially with Qualcomm being the lead ARM supplier right now. I actually haven't gotten to video until the end of the year. So I agree. For the next 6 or 7 months, we'll probably only see Snapdragon X Elite as the Copilot Plus ecosystem enabler. Yeah, it'll be really interesting to see how this transitions into Computex and then what that looks like for back to school and how that transitions into the holidays. There will be competition from AMD and Intel, but right now, Qualcomm has the exclusive and it's showing real compete for Microsoft to be able to compare against Apple's M3. Even though they did announce M4 just now, last week with the iPad Pro, it's still an iPad Pro. It doesn't really compete with Windows like a Mac OS would. So we'll see how it works out. I will probably be getting a few systems, including some of those from Dell. And you did make a good point that Dell generally is not always at the leading edge. Sometimes they do follow, but I will say they have been a really cool partner of Intel's, and for them to go all in like with Qualcomm after years and years of not even shipping anything with Qualcomm, I think it's actually a really big deal. And I think it's a vote of confidence in Microsoft and in Qualcomm, proving that this is possibly the future of a PC and hopefully 5G connectivity on PCs.
Yeah, I couldn't agree further. And what an opportunity for Qualcomm to grow into an adjacency and really drive a ton of volume. AI is bringing so much attention to the data center, to the cloud, and now to the PC. And from my perspective, I think as we move forward, AI workloads are going to become decidedly hybrid. So you're going to have larger language models in the cloud and connectivity that supports that. And then smaller language models at the edge of the network where data is created. And but it's incredible. And one of the things that I noted that you haven't mentioned is the battery life on this platform. It's incredible, right? What's the average target? It's over 24 hours, right?
No. So I would say right now, from what I've seen from all the OEMs, the average is about 20 to 21 hours of battery life, which is still better than what Apple's showing. And actually, our friends over at Signal 65, Ryan Shrout, went and benchmarked one of the Surface notebooks that has this chip in it against an M3 MacBook, and it beat it on battery life. So the huge improvement for the entire PC ecosystem on battery life, but also an upgrade on performance. So it's not a sacrifice, it's an overall upgrade. And that's why Microsoft, I think, believe that they needed to go with the moment at Qualcomm to shake things up. But we will see chips from Intel, AMD, and potentially others next year, maybe even late this year.
Yeah, and that diversity, I think, is just going to drive further innovation. And I'm glad you made the point that this isn't a Chromebook. So there's no sacrifice in performance, which is incredible. And there's some new features like this recall feature, right? That's AI-based because there is integrated AI in the Snapdragon silicon, right?
Yes, it's an NPU. So one of the limitations of the Copilot Plus platform is you must be able to hit 40 tops of AI performance on the NPU, not just in your graphics card or in some other accelerator. It needs to be an NPU or NPU-like experience. And right now, you have to either light up a big GPU to do that, or you just can't achieve it. Like, even Apple's M4 does 38 tops. So it's just under what a Copilot PC can do, Copilot Plus PC can do, and Intel's right now 11. But Lunar Lake, which they're coming out with later this year, will do 45. And I believe that AMD's next platform will also do 40. So we're going to be there. The PC ecosystem is going to grow pretty fast. Copilot Plus is going to be what I believe is the future of PC.
I want one right now. So I'm going to work my contact, Ed Ellett, at he's back at Dell. He and I met each other many years ago at Dell. He was the product manager with Dell that launched the first color notebook, the 325NC. And now he's back in a very senior role. But it was great to see you, Ed, if you're listening or viewing our podcast today. But hey, buddy, we kept it tight. I love it. We hit the topic. There's a lot of excitement going on. AI, I think it's going to change the world. We'd be remiss if we didn't mention NVIDIA and their earnings. Incredible. NVIDIA is leading the AI revolution. They just blew it out the door. The stock hit $1,000 a share for the first time in its history. And at its earnings, it did announce a 10-for-1 stock split, which is going to occur in early June. And there are just so many companies that are going to benefit from that. Dell is very well positioned. Intel and AMD are very well positioned. Certainly Qualcomm is going to capitalize on this as well. And this is great. I'm going to give Ed some credit as well. We were texting the other day, and it's almost the PC industry needed water, and AI is becoming the water. It's super exciting to see this. It's definitely an inflection point that we haven't seen since maybe the invention of the cloud. But hey, my friend, it's been another great podcast. Why don't you take us home?
Absolutely. We hope our viewers and listeners found this topic's interesting. If anyone out there would like to provide insights on this 5G topic for a future podcast, please reach out to us on social media. Will the Wheels Out, and I'm at Anshul Bhag. We hope you have a great weekend, and please tune in again next week. And don't forget to rate us and subscribe.